don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. Quick read for today is one I've been excited to get back to finally. I have this one on my list for quite a while as well. This is another one from Daniel Goldman at the Abacus Crypto Journal, and it is titled, Let's Do the Time Warp Again, The Verge Hack Part 2. If you haven't listened to the first part of this, I encourage you to do so. It is episode 76, and that's The Verge Hack Explained, also, of course, by Daniel Goldman and the Abacus Crypto Journal. But we are going to jump into part two. So, without further ado, here we go. The Pitfalls of Frankenstein Codebases. Whether size matters, writ blockchains, why inadequately fixing broken things is a bad idea, and a plea against blind, tribalistic crypto shilling, plus colorful charts and graphs. Note, this is a follow-up post. You may want to first read part one here. If you want to scare somebody in the cryptocurrency world, just utter the phrase 51% attack. This method of network assault, in which a single party manages to acquire enough mining power to outperform the joint forces of the rest of the network, can no longer be written off as an unfeasible hypothetical, at least not for smaller scale altcoins. Bitcoin Gold and Monocoin were both recently hit with such an attack, and it seems inevitable that more will soon follow. As far as these attacks go, however, there are important distinctions to note. When Verge was attacked at the beginning of April, it was widely reported as being in the 51% category. However, as I explained in part one, a combination of questionable design decisions and outright mistakes in Verge's software enabled the attacker to pull off their feet with far less than the majority of the hash power, making the 51% label wrong or at best misleading. Well, as it so happens, on May 22nd, Verge was attacked again. From the outside, the attack looks suspiciously similar to the first, which was odd. Surely in the six-week interval between attacks, some sort of fix must have been implemented that would at least make the attacker's life more complicated, right? Perhaps this time it was a legitimate 51% attack. Or maybe the attacker found some new, clever, fascinating, heretofore unfathomed security hole to exploit. I was curious to know the details, and many others seemed to be as well, so I decided to dig back in. Here's a drastically condensed version of what I discovered. 1. Much to my disappointment, the second hack was virtually identical to the first one, with one minor, unclever, uninteresting difference. 2. An issue that I hadn't covered in part 1 that actually is pretty interesting renders the whole situation for both hacks far worse than I had realized. 3. In the current state of the Verge repo, of the three sources of vulnerabilities that led to the attacks, two are slightly mitigated at best, and the third remains completely unfixed. 4. This is all bad. Why the second hack looks just like the first, with one insignificant and disappointingly uninteresting difference. The first time around, I explained how the mining exploit was made possible by two aspects of Verge's design: a high permitted time drift window that allows throttling of difficulty, and the use of 5 independent mining algorithms, which makes difficulty throttling a far more serious problem. After a few fits and starts, more on that later, the Verge devs ultimately implemented a patch that involves making the 5 mining algorithms a tad less independent. while leaving timestamp issues and difficulty adjustment untouched. In English, quote, when you give me a block mined with algorithm X, I look at the previous 10 blocks. If at least 5 of them were also mined with algorithm X, I reject your block. End quote. This very directly prevents all blocks from being mined with a single algorithm for any significant amount of time. The idea, presumably, was that since one algorithm dominated the whole network last time, explicitly preventing that particular case should be enough to thwart future attacks. A minor objection one could raise? Keeping the algorithms completely independent actually makes economic sense, and thus imposing this limitation is bound to have some unintended consequences. If difficulty is low enough for more than 5 of 10 consecutive blocks to be mined with one algorithm, preventing this from happening also prevents retargeting from smoothly hitting equilibrium. Abrupt peaks and valleys in difficulty will likely occur. A major objection one could raise, as some keen observers were quick to point out, this patch does little to actually fix the vulnerability. The attack vectors basically remain wide open. As a purely speculative and hypothetical example, imagine that the attacker can amass enough hash power to overwhelm the network for 2 of Verge's allotted mining algorithms instead of just 1. At absolute best, this would make the attack roughly twice as expensive. Given how shockingly cheap it has become to rent computational mining power, this may amount to no more than a trifling inconvenience. In either case, quote, this will be a bit more costly to pull off a second time, end quote, isn't exactly a comforting phrase in the world of cybersecurity. Once the dominant hash rate on 2 algorithms is achieved, our totally imaginary, speculative attacker could simply repeat the early April attack, but instead of mining all of the blocks with just 1 algorithm, just alternate between the 2 in intervals of 5 blocks at a time. Well, wouldn't you know? Begin chart. So the first chart is a difficulty over time chart, and it lists out in separate colors the 5 different algorithms used by Verge, and you can see very clearly that there were periods of time during the hacks in which both the Lyra2RE, which is green on the graph, and the Script, which is red, algorithms were both essentially manipulated down to 0 during the 2 periods of the attack on the 22nd and 23rd. Then the second graph is just zooming in very closely on just the 5 of 5 pattern, showing for Script and Lyra blocks, showing the alternation back and forth throughout the attack. And the third chart is just a block height versus timestamp chart that shows during the first attack the timestamp compression that happened, comparing a linear and steady growth of the timestamp versus block height, and then the massive spike up during the timestamp spoofing. End charts. So that's pretty much that. The bigger, more interesting issue. So going back to the aftermath of the first attack, some curious observers at the time wondered how and why it actually came to be that Verge would have a 30-minute difficulty adjustment window while allowing a time drift of 2 hours. It's clearly a mistake, but an error this egregious begs for some sort of explanation. One can't ever claim absolute certainty of the sources of others' blunders, but in this case, there does appear to be a highly probable culprit. Verge copied portions of their code from another project, PeerCoin, and in doing so, accidentally inherited the other coin's 2-hour time drift. 2 hours is an appropriate time drift for PeerCoin, given its much larger block times and difficulty adjustment window relative to Verge's. Before going any further, it's worth making something explicitly clear here. I'm not claiming there's anything wrong with copying code from an open source project. Indeed, making a project open source is an inherent invitation for others to freely draw from it. Reusing others' code is a part of being a developer. If I were forbidden from copying and pasting other solutions from StackOverflow.com, I wouldn't be able to pay my rent. However, there is something very wrong with reusing code for a high-stakes project without understanding the implications it will have in your software. Different projects, even those with many superficial similarities, involve different design decisions and require different security considerations. If you're patching together software from different sources, in the case of Verge, they appear to draw from Peercoin, Shield, Dogecoin, and Phantom, among others. Failure to understand the implications of even a single numerical constant can, and indeed did, result in a catastrophe. So, anyway, yes, odds are that that's how the 2-hour drift value snuck in. But that, in and of itself, isn't particularly noteworthy. Bad code does as bad code does, regardless of where it came from. The reason I've bothered bringing all of this up is because when one goes down the rabbit hole of investigating what else Verge inherited from Peercoin, a new alarming issue comes to light. First, to the whiteboard. Longest versus strongest chain. You're a blockchain protocol. How do you determine if a chain is valid? This, in a sense, is actually pretty straightforward. In short, you look at it. The data is all saved on a public ledger, so you can just explicitly check that all state transition rules are being properly abided by. If Alice pays Bob, Alice cryptographically verified that she actually has that money, nobody created new money out of thin air, things like that. Okay, but this is an open protocol, so what if there are two different chains given to you and both of them are valid? Which one do you pick as the canonical record? Ultimately, one has to be chosen. We can only have one version of history. That money has to belong to somebody. This is a stranger problem that requires a more novel solution, a solution which Satoshi provided. For a block of transactions to be considered valid, the block has to be mined, a computational process that involves consuming a non-trivial amount of energy. Then, if two competing valid chains are presented, the protocol selects whichever one has had the most mining work invested in its creation. Thus, as time goes on, it becomes increasingly costly for multiple chains to coexist, thereby increasingly incentivizing the network to come to consensus. Now, you'll often hear, quote, longest chain as the shorthand for, quote, chain with the most work, aka strongest chain. But if we take longest chain to mean, quote, the chain with most blocks, there's a subtle but important difference between these two notions. For the simple reason that mining difficulty can change over time, as Verge has so nicely illustrated for us. The longest and strongest chain need not necessarily be one and the same. Three low difficulty blocks may take less hash power to mine than one higher difficulty block, for example. Thus, there will be edge cases when simply accepting the longest chain would compromise the security of the system. Interestingly, this distinction appears to have initially been missed by Satoshi himself. The early implementations of Bitcoin went with the longest chain rule before this was surreptitiously updated. Since then, using the strongest chain rule has become the standard for proof-of-work coins, and rightfully so. Now, Peercoin, however, still does use the longest chain policy, but for them this makes perfect sense. Peercoin's consensus protocol uses proof of stake instead of proof of work. Blocks aren't mined, but rather are voted on by nodes with currency locked into the system. The important point here being that, unlike blocks in proof of work systems, Peercoin's blocks don't have, quote, weight in any sense. Things are binary. A given block is either accepted or rejected. Thus, when selecting between two competing chains, it's a perfectly sensible approach for Peercoin to simply count the blocks and select the longest one. But Verge does use proof of work, and thus blocks do have their own difficulty weight, and yet Unlike virtually every other proof-of-work-based coin, they use the longest chain, not strongest chain policy. Why? It sure looks like it's the same reason they ended up with a 2-hour time drift. They got it from PureCoin without realizing the risk it imposed. In other words, they messed up. Implications for attackers. Okay, so the canonical Verge chain is the one with the most blocks, which is not necessarily the one that requires the most work. How can our enterprising attacker best exploit this situation? Here's one way. The attacker picks a block at which to start his attack. When this block arrives, he starts mining, quote, in the dark. In other words, he doesn't accept anyone else's blocks, and he doesn't try to broadcast any blocks he finds to the rest of the network, effectively creating his own personal chain. His goal is to build this chain out to the point that it's longer than the network's. This would normally be a daunting task, since he's competing against the rest of the network as a whole, which one presumes is a lot of hash power to race against. However, as loyal readers know from part 1, our attacker can gradually decrease mining difficulty. And note that now, since his chain is, quote, personal and still not getting broadcast, this difficulty decrease only applies to himself, not to any other miners. As his difficulty decreases, his blocks mined per second rate increases. And thus, it's just a matter of time before his chain becomes longer than the network's. Since he's forging timestamps anyway, the amount of time it actually takes for him to catch up is basically immaterial. At this point, the attacker broadcasts his new chain far and wide, which the rest of the network obligingly accepts. So now, to maintain network dominance, he just has to make sure his chain stays the longest. In theory, another miner could outpace and thwart him, but the situation he's in gives him 3 inherent additional advantages. 1. Whenever a valid block is broadcast, it takes some time before a majority of the nodes in the network receive it. For Bitcoin, it typically takes 7 to 10 seconds, for example. For a smaller network like Verge, propagation will happen faster, but one can safely estimate that it will still take at least a few seconds. Since the attacker is mining multiple blocks per second, by the time another node receives one of his blocks, the attacker has already mined the next, and the next, perhaps. In this way, he perpetually stays at least one ahead, forcing other miners to orphan any new block they've created, if they can even manage to create a block in the first place. 2. Since he is, presumably, the only one forging timestamps, his one or more ahead chain will still always have the advantage of being slightly easier to mine on than any other competing chain in progress. And 3, the attacker decides to selfishly mine blocks with 0 transactions, and thus the block creation process will be faster for him than for the other honest miners, who waste precious moments gathering and hashing transactions in the mempool. He can increase this burden on them by spamming the network with a flurry of his own transactions, which the other miners will slavishly try to include in their futile, soon-to-be-orphaned-anyway blocks. So there you have it. Add the ill-advised use of longest chain selection to the list of issues. And note that as of writing, the chain selection code still has yet to be modified. The second fix. So what has been changed then? We already covered the fix following the first hack. After the second hack, they finally lowered the time drift window from 2 hours down to 10 minutes. Whether 10 minutes is the appropriate drift is something I can't claim to be qualified to answer. What I can confirm is that a third attack was clearly attempted on May 29th. The attacker was able to repeatedly create difficulty valleys, though he never did dominate the whole network this time. Begin chart. And we have another time versus the difficulty chart with the separate algorithms in separate colors. And we see a Lyra specifically, but also a similar dip in script that's not so pronounced. But these periods where the difficulty dips and then rises back up to normal and then dips and rises back up, as the attacker is able to significantly decrease the difficulty, but never actually achieve a virtually zero difficulty, as was done in the past. End chart. In any case, one could be forgiven for wondering why it took 6 weeks and another hack for the simple obvious change to be made, which brings us to the fits and starts alluded to earlier. While patching the first hack, they seem to have initially wanted to decrease the time drift to 15 minutes, but things kept going wrong. First, they failed to convert 15 minutes into seconds. Then, they failed to convert 15 minutes into seconds again. Then, realizing that changing the time drift rules had retroactively made old blocks invalid and thus forced a hard fork on the chain, they made sure the rule only applied after a certain block and alerted all clients that they had to immediately update again, until finally they reverted all time drift changes they'd made altogether and went with the quote 5 out of 10 patch described above. After going through all of this riffraff, why did the time drift fix end up getting ditched anyway? Perhaps they really thought that the 5 out of 10 patch would be enough. What this commit message seems to imply is that they simply forgot. Frankly, I'm not sure which is worse. As for what will happen moving forward, in April they indicated that they were working on a quote, a whole new method for block and transaction verification, end quote. More recently, they've said that they are working on rebuilding the project in a new repository, which is private as of writing, where they'll be rebasing their code into that of Bitcoin Core. So I suppose we'll see how that goes. Final thoughts and FUD. What can I possibly say here? When I started investigating Verge, it was purely out of intrigue and curiosity about how such a hack could be accomplished. I truly had no interest in attacking the developers or the community of users, or in casting the project in a bad light. So at the risk of putting the cart before the horse, I want to preempt any possible accusations impugning my motives and make this crystal clear. This time, I am trying to spread FUD. Sometimes fear, uncertainty, and doubt are reasonable responses to a situation. And if you have any sort of investment in the success of Verge and aren't experiencing some combination of those three emotions, I can only conclude that you're lying to yourself or aren't paying attention. Because there's just no way around it. This shit is inexcusable. This level of irresponsible negligence would be deemed unacceptable in an undergraduate's Comp Sci 101 midterm project, let alone a project giving rise to a digital asset worth, by at least one metric, hundreds of millions of dollars. Trust-minimized systems will always still have certain parties granted some degree of good faith. And like it or not, programmers are inevitably one of those parties. Having specialized skills and knowledge makes them sort of pseudo-fiduciaries, and the only way to keep such actors honest is to hold their feet to the fire at all times and demand explanations when things go awry. Instead, what we see in all too many of these crypto communities, and no, I'm certainly not only talking about the Verge fam here, are armies of cheerleading sycophants who seem to have actually convinced themselves that if they can maintain constant levels of hyperjubilance about their project and confront any criticism by slandering and shaming it out of existence, then the ensuing hype bubble they create and the accompanying value increase of their precious coins will be enough for them to retire on. Well, this is what you get. You get a team that's off issuing press releases about the latest big-name partnerships, while technical issues that require only a basic understanding of cryptocurrency protocols and a few man-hours to fix sit exposed for some psychotically focused hacker to have his way with. And until somebody decides to pressure somebody else to do some form of due diligence, it'll just keep happening. Because as far as Verge is concerned, I'm afraid the unavoidable conclusion is that this hacker is currently doing better due diligence on this codebase than the Verge developers themselves. I'd poach him if I were them. And there we have it. That was Let's Do the Time Warp Again, The Verge Hack Part 2, which I learned is actually pronounced Deux, D-E-U-X. I've always referred to it as Deuce. But this was absolutely wonderful. I've been really enjoying Daniel Goldman's work. Thank you again, Daniel, for this. Doing the hard work and the research into what the heck is going on with these hacks. And who was a little bit unnerving. Like, talk about some FUD. If I was holding Verge right now, I would be nervous. But what's hilarious is some of these attacks happen, and the price of these coins will go up. I think some of this stuff just shows how unbelievably immature the market still is, because the public is so misinformed or just completely uneducated on any of these technical matters. And it seems like the Verge developers themselves were making these changes almost arbitrarily and didn't even understand the consequences of some of these changes. Like, I'll go back to the specific comment. Where is this? So, all right, so this is a highlighted part of the article, but it's referring to the time drift. They were trying to change the two-hour time drift down to 15 minutes, because obviously 2 hours is pulled from Peercoin. I mean, he went over all of that. But first, they failed to convert 15 minutes into seconds. Now, he has links to these, and this is actually on the GitHub page. So this is what he's linking to, and he's got three different links. First, they failed to convert 15 minutes into seconds. Then they failed to convert 15 minutes into seconds again. And then realizing that the time drift rules had retroactively made old blocks invalid and forced a hard fork in the chain, they made sure the rule only applied after a certain block, alerting all the clients they had to immediately update yet again. And then that's when they finally reverted all of the time drift changes they'd made altogether and went with the 5 out of 10 patch described above. So going into the actual GitHub to see what they changed, the constant is in max clock drift. And it's measured in seconds. So it was originally 2 times 60 times 60, or 60 seconds, multiplied by 60 minutes, and then 2. And out to the side, they've got commented out, /, 2 hours. And they have changed it to 2 times 15, and then commented out that that's 15 minutes. Now, if they had mistakenly not thought about the fact that this was measured in seconds, they would have 30 minutes. But that it's measured in seconds, it's actually 30 seconds. So the comment 15 minutes is not right in either context, whether it would be minutes or seconds that they're measuring it in. And a bunch of comments point this out, and some of them are rather funny. So some people are just like, LMFAO, oh, please pinch me. And other people are even mentioning that I just don't even see how this is a good solution, regardless of whether the math is right. And then the next link is that they failed to convert it to seconds again. They changed, and these are commits that were merged. And so this was originally 2 times 15, which again was commented out as 15 minutes, and they changed it to 2 times 15 times 15, which is now 7.5 minutes, not 15 minutes. But they have no comment out to the side. So they don't even delineate that whether or not they were trying to make it 7.5 minutes at this, which why they just wouldn't put in 450 seconds or whatever I don't know. But and then the final link was talking about how, so when they changed that time drift rule, it invalidated old blocks. They're changing a consensus rule. They're changing the checks that are verifying whether a block is a real block or a discarded block. And blocks that were deep in the chain had a higher time drift than the new rule that they just put in place, causing a hard fork and a reorg of the chain. And So now they updated it by changing the, they actually changed it again. There's another commit that shows that it's 60 times 20, which turns it into 20 minutes. But they actually changed the entire variable altogether. Rather than in max clock drift, they changed it to get max clock drift and measured it so that if it was before a certain height in the chain, before the hard fork, I assume, is that it would be 2 times 60 times 60, or the old 2-hour drift, which they commented out, else the new drift is 10 times 60, which is now 10 minutes, but which is different from the 7.5-minute drift that caused the fork, and different from the 20 minutes that they had changed it to. And then after all of this, I haven't found exactly where it is, it doesn't look like, but it looks like they've completely reverted all of those changes and just turned it into the 5 out of 10 patch. So I don't even know what the clock drift is right now. It looks to me like it's 10 minutes, but I think what Daniel is saying is that it's back to 2 hours. Who knows? That's a lot of changes and a lot of consequences for something that then just got discarded. So I don't know. This is a great article. I really enjoyed this one. All this stuff going on with Verge is so interesting and unfortunately kind of embarrassing too. And like I said, really just shows the immaturity of the market and how ignorant the people are about this technology and what it really means. And consequences of stuff. You can't just change validity rules and then just merge and put it on the network and think everything is going to go fine without even thinking about it. That's just crazy. But don't forget to check out Daniel Goldman's other stuff. And a call to everyone out there. If anybody finds an article that is as detailed as this for what's been going on with EOS, because it's only recently had a network launch, and I think it had 2 attempted launches that did not work out. I know there was at least one, and it ran into some headaches, and filling up my feed with all this new stuff going on, and I really haven't dug into it, but it just seems ridiculous. So if anybody has a source, I found one article so far that's pretty good. I haven't finished it, though. But if anybody can find an article that details all this, what's going on with EOS at this level, that would be wonderful. I really, really, really want to dig into that. It looks fun. So, don't forget to check out Daniel Goldman. And if you feel like digging into that, I will absolutely turn it into a quick read. That would be wonderful. Don't forget to tag me if you release that. And of course, don't forget to check out the Abacus Crypto Journal and the other great articles they have up there. Really good source of info. A lot of different stuff going on there. And also, I have an announcement coming up. I got some new developments in the pipeline. So keep an ear out for that. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to make sure you don't miss it. And of course, follow me on Twitter and Medium as well. And share the podcast with all of your friends in the crypto economy space so they can keep up to date on all the best Bitcoin articles and goings on. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that one, and I will catch you next time on the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.